Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
This 5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Joe Goldberg. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Al, although I'm fighting off, I think, my usual springtime cold slash sinus infection. So if the listener hears me slobbing and snobbing and whatever, it's me trying to be healthy.
drinking
liquids, fluids.
Yeah,
don't tell you what kind, but they're there. It's allergy season, cold season, sinus infection season. So I'll whine about three things at once just to make my life much more efficient.
Yeah, get it all out. Why not? Okay, now today we are going back into the world of spies. Sort of, you know,
right.
Cold War, all that sort of stuff. So joining us, we've got an author who's got the third book out now, Surviving Prague, and that's his third book in the Holloman series. So Paul Hollis, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me, Joe and Alan.
Yeah, it's good.
It's always Alan and Joe. Make sure you have the man first, and then there's little old me.
No, it's all good. So listen, so you're interesting. You got quite the experience in these books. So now, and you put it to your own experience. So let's talk about you a little bit. So Paul, how did you get into this type of writing? Like what experience did you go through?
Well, I like to say that 80% of my stories are about 90% true. So that probably deserves a little background there in itself. I was actually born in Alabama, of all places, and I actually brewed and sold moonshine with my father. And I grew up in Chicago, where I distilled LSD in the chemistry lab for the Cicero mob, actually, and I used my my brewing skills from when I was 5 years old with my dad. So, but anyway, and I also really came of age in California when I hung out with some musicians that you probably heard of, Santana and Garcia and Joplin and Grace Slick and many others. But you could probably guess from that I was actually majoring in staying out of Vietnam in college. It's kind of got to that. So I did attend Woodstock, of all places. There's an old saying, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there, of course. But there are certain things you don't forget. I remember what 19 was like. I remember being hungry, buzzed, and pumped all at the adrenaline all at the same time. And dirty and wet were just the same thing at that time. And, you know, we shared what we had and that sort of thing. And I remember dancing to the nonstop music and, you know, so what I don't really remember is another time like that.
Well, and so when you were doing all that, were you kind of aware of like what you're writing about, you know, the Cold War and the tensions and all that? Was that something you were aware of at the time?
Not a clue. I'll tell you, after I, when I graduated, you know, my my dad was a railroad detective, and he said, "Oh, I should go to Quantico, you know, go to you know, FBI school and all that." And I thought, well, you know, I've spent 4 years trying to stay out of Vietnam and carrying guns and stuff, so maybe that might not be the best choice. So after about a year of working with a college degree in my hands, I joined the FBI, the Peace Corps, as a an alternative to war. Well, to be honest, I thought working for a living was kind of a poor career choice. So I wanted to see the I wanted to see the world on somebody else's money. That was my main goal in life. Is I just wanted to see the world, and so I joined the Peace Corps. And about 48 hours later, I was in a in my training process. I was in a place called Paintsville, Kentucky. It's just right off the Cumberland Gap, and probably a stone's throw from the Lost World of Virginia, really close down there. And about a month into this education, I thought, geez, these guys really aren't kidding. So I jumped at an unexpected opportunity to visit Africa. And I thought maybe lions and tigers might be preferable to the dinosaurs that live just beyond that Cumberland Gap kind of area. But as it turned out, it wasn't much better. So what happened was about a week into this in East Africa, which is in a place called Tanzania, which was a very new country at the time. And that actually where the Tanzania mineral gemstone comes from, if you're familiar with that light blue stone. But I didn't see any of those when I was there. But I did dig a lot of latrines. I was probably standing in mud up to my knees in mud, and some kind of animal dung maybe was mixed in it, but completely immersed in my new position. And I thought, well, you know, I'm kind of lost and abandoned here on this rain-soaked crust of earth, and I really couldn't tell if I was crying or if it was raining harder. So at that time, this guy came in with a story for me, and I don't know why he picked me. That's beyond unfathomable. I just was kind of in the wrong place at the right time, or the right place at the wrong time. I'm not sure which, but he turned out to be my future handler, and he offered me unrestricted travel in Europe. All I had to do is occasionally watch some people or learn some people or report on places, things that were happening in Europe and these kind of things. And he didn't quite mention terrorists at this time, but he said, you know, it kind of sounded better than I had at the time. But then I had 3 weeks of training under a U.S. Marine Corps instructor, which was, if you're anybody related to the Marines, they are bad boys, and they do not have any sympathy or pity for anyone that they're training. So this got to the point where I was sort of my lesser known activities, I would say, is traveling in Europe in the early 1970s. Let me talk a little bit about the terrorism that was going on at that time. It was on the rise, and I was assigned to learn as much as I could about it, as I said, and I was supposed to learn about specific people or places or plans that they had heard of or that I could figure out that was a sort of that might bring terror to our shores here in the United States or otherwise go against our worldwide interests, you know, sort of thing. So I collected information like I was supposed to, and I was supposed to turn it over to the professionals who would resolve the situation of whatever I gave them information on. That being probably the CIA, but I couldn't tell for sure at that time. That's how it was supposed to work. But when you're young and wild and untrained, really, and things don't always go to according to plan. Things happen that you don't expect, and so that's where these books start to come in. In those days with the terrorists changing their routine, basically, let me say that the former acts of violence were really kind of distinct and personal against a specific target and some definable enemy. But in the early 70s, the terrorists were beginning to change that strategy to the more, let's say, familiar, senseless kind of chaos that we have recognized today. The death of a political figure no longer seemed to bother much about these people and us in particular in the humanity. And I was actually thinking, well, you know, go ahead and kill a few politicians. They're really a dime a dozen, and somebody else is going to replace them in 2 seconds anyways, right? So what the terrorists did was they changed their targets to the innocent becoming, you know, preferable to those that were just kind of specific, you know, for an ideology or something like a politician. But what they did was they changed it to these bombs and plots that would just sort of kill indiscriminately across women and children and innocent people who were just trying to make their way through the world. Right. So that was the kind of thing that was coming across. So what happened then is that in my memory, I didn't have any idea of writing this down at the time, but I would sort of would say right now, describing my books, that they are sort of, I would say different is better than different. That would be my motto. Sorry, different is better than better. I always get my words mixed up on that one, but an example of that is that the books aren't really about Jason Bourne and Jack Ryan and maybe James Bond lookalikes. They're I'm not trying to rehash those books or the characters. Mine is about a guy who is would run in every direction that he could. He was no hero, not clever, capable, not particularly talented, or certainly not tested. So he was sort of like the opposite end of those elusive characters that always got everything right and they could handle everything they could do in a battle sort of thing. So I was just kind of the guy who was kind of trying to make it through alive without this terrorism bit killing me kind of thing. And being in the early 20s, you know, I didn't really have a sort of a fear that we kind of collect as we get older. You know, knowing that, hey, I might be over my head here. And it's like, no, I'm not going to live till I'm 30 anyway. So it was that kind of a sort of attitude kind of thing that I had grown up with through the whole, you know, as you can see from my experiences through my whole life. And what you need to do is kind of, picture a guy in a red shirt, maybe on a Star Trek adventure. And so the word that comes to mind is expendable. It's not like you are dependable in any sort of way, but I'm sure that they thought if I killed myself or someone else killed me, no harm done, they would collect another guy or two or five or ten and go ahead and put them into the same situation. So that was the kind of environment that I was in when the books.
Did you understand that? Did you understand that at the time? Did you realize that you were just kind of, they didn't care? In a sense, they were just using you as long as you lived. They could get what they needed from you, and then when you get killed, oh, well, next. Like, did you understand that was what was going on, or is this something you see now if you look back?
Absolutely not. I didn't understand that at all. And if I had, you know, if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have probably said, gee, maybe I should take some more care with what I'm doing as a young man. But no, I didn't really think about it, because what they said was, you know, basically, don't get mixed up in anything. Don't really do this. And I couldn't find the right information sometimes. And you know, the main source in those days was the libraries, way before the internet and cell phones and everything. So, you know, I had to look at microfiche, old microfiche, and look at articles and newspapers and you know, magazine kind of things, and to find out information in that way. But that only went so far. And then I had to figure out how to follow some of these people, you know, sort of thing, and not get caught following them, not get into too much trouble, you know, because it turned out the Marine Corps told me that the Marines told me that I'm not a very good shot with a gun. So I did learn how to do that. But fortunately, I actually ran into an MI6 agent who was a young lady about my age at the time. And she became my protector through that, most of that. And I would say the books are as much about her as they are about me. You know, she was my protection. She always had a gun, always had a weapon of some sort, and was not afraid to use it, kind of thing. But I did not understand any of the situation I was in, which kind of brings out some of the intricacies that I didn't understand, that I wasn't supposed to go and sort of meet with people and in certain people, and that were not the most trustworthy kind of people and that sort of thing. So I just went and did what I thought was best. Fortunately, I had a half a brain, probably a full brain, but kind of in that way. But you know, got through it a little bit. So no, I didn't understand it.
What were you getting out of it? Like, okay, so you're young and you're kind of wild and you kind of done different things that were kind of on the edge and traveling, and you didn't really have any, you know, you're just wayward and having a time and stuff. So this happens and you start doing this. So what did you feel you were getting, or did you care? Like what was going through your mind?
Yeah, I got to, you know, as I said, I wanted to see the world on somebody else's money. And they said, they gave me a number that I had to memorize and kind of thing. But, I could go anywhere I wanted to in the free world. I couldn't go wasn't supposed to go to the Iron Curtain countries and things like that. Although you'll see in the third book that I did actually have to break into Czechoslovakia. I won't give away too much there. I got a free ride anywhere I wanted to go in Western Europe, and I had to I could go to any American Express office when I needed money, and I'd give them that number, and they'd give me a bundle of pesetas or francs or, you know, Deutschmarks or whatever, wherever it was at the time. So I was able to, you know, go where I wanted to, see what I wanted to, and just be available for their phone calls, which sometimes emanated from me and sometimes from them if they actually knew where I was. And I mean, it wasn't full time nonstop terrorism. It was maybe 3 to 6 months at a time, although it should have been a couple of weeks at a time, according to them. But I just kind of got mixed up into stuff, and I learned a lot. I mean, every day, even to this day, I try to learn something. But I learned how to do makeup. I learned how to grow a beard when there was no beard there, and learn how to change the color of my hair, and learn how to understand people, understand what they were like, and even from their shoes, you know, sort of thing, what kind of shoes they wore, how the shoes wore down, you know, sort of thing, and were they new, were they leather, were they plastic, you know, those kinds of things. But normally what I found back in the day is that people don't actually look at people. And what happens then is that, you know, the old Clark Kent thing is you put glasses on and people don't see the same person, you know, and you put a pebble in your shoe and now you've got a little limp and it's not the same person at all. It means they just don't see you, you know, sort of thing. And to this day, I'm amazed that people just really don't see the people around them, you know, sort of thing. So that was one thing I learned, and it really helped me a lot of times when I got into trouble, just to understand what was going through, kind of what was going through their heads at the time, kind of thing. But, you know, that was not is terrorizing in most situations, as I might have you think right now. I have a 2-inch scar on my palm of my hand from a knife fight in southern France. That's actually in the first book. That seems to be the only scar that I got in all those interactions, let's say, in those days. So got the crap beat out of me a few times that I'm not particularly proud of. One was by a woman, she was a prostitute, and she thought I was going to take her money, but I wasn't interested in her money. I was interested in what else she had in her purse. But anyways, don't come between a woman and her money. So that taught me a lesson as well. It was just a time to be a kid and to see the world I guess it just got me started on, I've probably lived overseas totally probably for 10 years, at least that much, in not just Europe, but in lots of places, Sao Paulo, Brazil, and Tokyo, and Malaysia, and South Africa, and Cape Town, and Anchorage, Alaska. There's another world for you up there. So my whole goal in life was to see the world, broaden my perspective, understand, kind of what's going on in the world, just because it's a world, not because it has politics or culture or anything else in it, but all that sort of thing kind of gravitated into the books, sort of thing.
Well, Paul, when did you decide to put this down in the books? When did you start scribbling all these stories down and turn them into?
It's interesting. My son, I adopted him when he was 50. So when I was 50, he was just born, but, we put him in gymnastics kind of thing too, at 3 years old, to kind of burn off the energy. And it didn't actually work that way because he loved it and, stayed with gymnastics all the way through college, basically. But when he was in grammar school, he had like 4 hours of training every night and he loved it. But the parents, we just kind of dropped the kids off and went to the local pub, which is just down the street. And, they would ask me questions and I would say this or that, kind of thing. And one of the ladies, a lady doctor, a good friend of mine, she says, why don't you write this down in the book? And I thought, I don't know. When am I going to do that? And she says, well, you're retired. What else you got to do? So I thought, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. And the more I wrote down, the easier I got. It was fun after a while. It was fun, to retell a story that I hadn't really dwelled on for 45 years, some 50 years, maybe something like that. That was what it was in 2013. I think I published the first book kind of the rest is history there. It just, I try to sort of show a story rather than telling it so much, as much as I can. I read a lot of books where they just kind of tell the story. It was important for me in writing the book to figure out what would make this thing visual, so to get people actually along with me for this whole ride, sort of thing. It was kind of important to immerse the readers into each scene and I wanted the readers to experience what I experienced at the same time that I was experiencing it, feel the excitement, the voices, hear the voices, those kinds of things there. I believe that I went to two different aspects of the book to help me figure that out. And one was that, one thing I learned was that realistic dialogue is indispensable. When and how people talk make those characters come to life. Readers may will always kind of, and I do this as well, we'll skip some bits of description and scenery and maybe some of the story too, but for some reason they're always gravitated to what characters say. I mean, that dialogue is really you know, how the way people actually speak is really important. I see a lot in it, like everyone has perfect English when they're speaking, but that's not how we interact with people. I mean, and it's not how we talk. You've got contractions or the lack of contractions. You got slang. You got accents. You got hesitations. You got word selections. The physical actions while you're speaking, you know, sort of thing. And each one of those combinations is unique and specific to one character. If you can do that, then the character walks off the page and joins the reader for the ride through the story. So, that's the first thing that I learned. And the second thing was actually location. You know, in its own way has its own experience and has its own feel to the visual kind of arena. Would a viewer watch a TV movie that was set in Paris or London, for example, that maybe happened all exclusively indoors, right? So to me, that I would say not so much for me, but if that is what happens, then the location becomes moot, and you can take it all the way outside of the whole story, because it could happen indoors anywhere in Los Angeles or Chicago or wherever. So it's important for me to have understood what location means to the story as well. To me, it's kind of its own character. Location challenges characters. You know, you have different languages, and you have cultures, and you have different weathers. The weather pattern could be a character in itself. You know, and people around them. You know, all that sort of thing are all interacting with what's going on and have an effect on what's going on. So you can make unique characters out of those critical roles in the story, I would say. You know, so you've got the three things where, you know, they say in a story it's man versus man versus himself, and man versus nature. And we don't really, other than things like Jack London and To Build a Fire, we don't really get into man fighting a storm. It's like a byproduct of what's going on in the real story. But I see location and what location brings with it, being culture and weather and language and all that sort of thing, as being unique characters amongst themselves, and they challenge the protagonist and antagonist and all the other characters, but they're challenged by that, but when they see that as another character, then they have to deal with it at some level. You have to deal with it. So it's a different world than sort of living in America, you know, where everybody sort of speaks English. I mean, I don't quite understand everything that New Englanders say that they say in the South, but we do. We know what's going on, sort of thing. So that's how I use the feel of the location or the environment. It's that you want to be able to not just hear about it or read about it, but feel the fog in London, or the taste of a French cuisine, you know, sort of thing. Something like that. So that's what you want to do. And that's what I've tried to do in the books.
Well, so when you're plotting out your books, do you start with the location, put the characters in that location? Or do you say, I got some characters, where would they best be drawn out, their personalities and their characteristics, in what type of location?
Actually, I don't actually plot them out because they're already done deals, as it says. You know, I know the old dichotomy between planning and being like a pantser, right? So, but I didn't really have the chance to do that much in these books because the location was where I was, and so I sort of take the people through the locations and that, and the characters are already defined, they're already there, they're with me. So all I was doing is really kind of doing like a police report, maybe you could look at it that way, like after the fact, here's what happened, you know, sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
What do you hope people get out of this then? When you're writing these, what are you writing them for? Is it just pure entertainment or?
Well, yes and no. I would like people to enjoy the books, but what I would also like them to understand that there's a huge big world out there that doesn't really involve terrorism, but it's a huge big world out there that we should get out and visit, you know, see some of the different cultures around the world and understand that that people are the same no matter where you go. We have the same biases and same political outlooks and religious, whatever the religion is, it's the same kind of outlooks, and we're just trying to make our way from day to day, other than, you know, the filthy rich people, you know, but normal people are just kind of making their way from day to day and don't really have a whole lot of animosity against the other cultures and things like that, although they do as much as we do, I'm sure. So I mean, just get out and just kind of broaden your perspective, to see that and know that there's a huge big world out there that, can teach us all a lot, kind of thing. So that's really what I'd like to get out of the books.
Well, do you got more stories in you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I am. I, unfortunately, what I did was in the last chapter of the Surviving Prague, I was sort of intending to sort of end it there because I thought maybe people were kind of getting tired of reading these. But I sort of talked myself and wrote myself into another book there for that. But I do have many more stories. And everything I've been telling you today has a story in itself as well, you know. So I don't know if I'm going to would do a prequel to this to talk more about things like my college days or more about the Peace Corps or something of that sort. But definitely if there's a fourth book in there, and there's probably a fifth or sixth as well, but I hadn't really, I thought really maybe I'd go on to something else, but this is pretty much fun. I mean, I like doing this and I like sort of intrigue and it's almost like a nonstop action, in the books. Not everyone gets killed like in some books, so it's just kind of like what happened there and the different interactions of tons of cultures and things like that. I've got thousands of stories that just didn't go into those books. They just didn't fit in there in one way or another just yet.
Well, Paul, you got a pretty impressive social media following, like on Twitter, is like almost 100,000. How'd you do that? That's a lot. I've been on Twitter for a while. I'm not a blink to your number. Where do you get 100,000 followers? How did you market that way?
What I try to do with all social media is not just kind of get followers, but try to make friends there and to actually interact with people, that to, you know, when a writer asks questions, you answer them. You know, if you know the answers, you should be happy to answer them. And they take 30 seconds to 3 minutes to 5 minutes to answer. So it's not that big a deal. But, so what I also do is I made my followers on Twitter especially feel like they were my equal. Like they're my friends. I anybody that comes along, I retweet their stuff. I don't really, you know, if it's non-political and non-religious and that sort of thing, if it has to do with books, I will retweet it for them. So they follow me, and I, you know, I get, I don't know, they just keep following, and I just keep, thanking them and going on. But like, if you look at Facebook, I mean, I have probably 4,500 there, followers, and I'll bet you that I don't know, and I have not heard from 4,000 of them ever in my life, you know, so I don't know why those people, follow me. I mean, you would think that, okay, you want to interact. I mean, I as a person want to interact. If I know somebody, I want to interact with them. I also want to put them up on a shelf and forget about them. That's what I do. I just kind of try to interact with people and never, you know, never degrade anybody or anything like that, you know, because that's not healthy or helpful. So, you know, I mean, everybody has something great inside of them, and they need to get it out there. And I want to know about it. I just want to hear about it. And it's all kind of fun to me. I just love to learn things.
Do you ever worry about writing any of these stories, something coming back at you, or writing about someone that wants to, doesn't like you writing about them, or did you stay away from that?
First, most of them, if not all of them, are dead by now. Because there were, you know, every alphabet kind of thing that goes on with our country, is run by kind of older people, you know, older white people with experience, let's say. So they're all gone or retired or whatever, but I don't, in the book, I don't really say anything that would be considered top secret or secretive of any sort. It's kind of like a dumb kid going through, okay, I gotta, you know, I'm trying to figure this out, so here's the best I can do with what I have, which is kind of nothing except for the one MI6 agent. I communicated with Fort Meade a lot. I'm sure all those guys are long gone from there. I changed except for the factual parts, like the when the Prime Minister of Spain gets blown up, he is a specific, person, he's named in there and this stuff, but he's also been dead for 35 or 40 years. I don't really press anybody's buttons that way, let's say.
How do you choose which stories you're going to write about?
Just things that I remembered, kind of in a chronological sequence. One of my first adventures over there, I'd say, it was something that happened in Amsterdam, and that's where I met the MI6 agent, and I totally screwed that up for her. The assignment, because the British were looking at the same thing I was looking at the time. But after that, the next big thing was there was a bombing at the British embassy in Paris, and there was a little girl killed there. I was actually assigned originally to watch the suspected guy that did that, that killed a bunch of people there anyway. But that took me to Spain, which is where the book starts, and then I went through that until that was resolved, and then on to London. I was actually going for a little holiday to London, which is where the lady lived, and I got involved in the IRA bombing at the time, and that took up the second story, and then she was, shortly after that, she was transferred to the Czechoslovakian embassy at that time, which is behind the Iron Curtain, and And she got into a little trouble there. And I sort of had to break into Czechoslovakia to help her. But it turns out that, of course, she helped me more, way more than, and she not, neither needed nor wanted my help at that time. But I, there I was, you know, so we made the best of that deal. And so it was all like chronologically. Now at the end of that, book there, the U.S., my handler is looking for me because I didn't actually follow the rules. I guess I never really have followed many rules, but yeah, it all kind of goes chronologically kind of thing. So, those are the big stories. That there are tons of little stories in there that wouldn't really equate to a book kind of thing just yet. So that's why I'm sort of blogging about some of them as we go along in this last couple months or so.
Right. How do people find you then? Like, what social media and where's your blog and website? Give out all your contact information.
The easiest way to find me is thehollowmanseries.com is my website, and it's got all the blog and book information on there. If you would like to join me on Facebook, I would appreciate that. That is just Paul Hollis or Paul Hollis author, and I have a private group actually just kind of requested to get into that. It's all about writing and telling stories and that sort of thing. So, which are really good, and people are very interested in that sort of thing. And of course on Twitter, I'm Hollowmanseries, at Hollowmanseries, and you can find me there. That's easy enough. Email, if you want to email me, is Paul at thehollowmanseries.com. And hey, you're welcome to call me too, if you'd like. That phone number.
Oh, man.
I've had the same phone number since cell phones were invented. And I'll bet you every person in the world knows it.
Wow, that's crazy. But hey.
Yeah.
Hey, it's whatever you like. It's all good. Now, we're going to have all that up on the website, of course. And, of course, your new book is Surviving Prague, and that's the third book in the Holloman series. So thank you for being here, Paul Hollis.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's always fun to talk to you, Alan and Joe. It's always good.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.